your podcast.
My podcast. Our podcast.
One of us is the steward of this podcast.
The creator, if you will.
And the other person is just a recurring guest.
I wouldn't say you're a recurring guest. You're the official second in command, maybe. You've done a couple without me, remember.
Second class citizen.
Remember, you did a handful without me. Mm-hmm. It was like those episodes of Equalizer where McCall was in a coma, and Mickey Kossmeyer and Robert Mitchum had to take over.
All right.
Robert Mitchum, he was Southern Control in a two-parter. It was a pretty big deal.
Okay.
Tonight, from 1990, for our great return to form, we're going to talk about Emilio Estevez writing and directing Men at Work, mm-hmm. with his brother, Charles Sheen, mm-hmm. the bad guy slash sort of good guy in The Fly as the bad guy in this. Yeah, so this was your request. Before I took off on my year of adventure in Los Angeles, which is a story for another time, we lined everything up for issue episode session. I call them sessions, mm-hmm. for session 300, which ended up being quite a big blockbuster deal. Mm-hmm. And now this is 301, Men at Work.
How many have we actually done?
How many podcasts?
Yeah.
It's
just because we skipped 301 doesn't mean that we didn't pass 300 a long time ago.
We didn't... No, we didn't pass it, really. I mean, we did a few postpones in L.A., no. The side project, when I was in Los Angeles.
We've also done several since you've come back. What do those count as?
We haven't really done several. We did Skyfall. We did the bonus Skyfall podcast. We did the Hobbit podcast. And that will probably go up before I get 301 because I got to get this. I got to get the theme 300. This is the first return big deal podcast. Like we're going to do our segments. We're going to do the whole thing. We got Penguin.
I knew that pizza guy was in ski school. He was in ski school too. Also,
he's in both ski schools.
Yeah, Dean Cameron.
Dean
Cameron. John Getz is the bad guy.
Yes, John Getz. So we got
whatever you want, John Getz.
John Getz from The Fly. Ski School and Ski School 2 star Dean Cameron.
That's Dean Cameron, yeah.
Keith David. In Rare. No, not Rare. Because Keith David's always good.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, like for a minute there, it seemed like this movie was just going to be the Sheen brothers. I'm going to just refer to it. It's simpler. The Sheen brothers. James and Carl driving around in a garbage truck.
The name is actually Estevez.
Yeah, it is.
The Estevez brothers.
But whatever. You know?
I think Martin changed his name.
Yes, he did. He did
to a stage name, and Charlie decided to take his stage name. Which is
yeah.
Weird.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. So the Estevi driving
the Esteveses
driving a truck with Shell Shock style. Keith David just kind of riding shotgun, literally and figuratively.
It had been a long time since I had seen this. I knew that there was some toxic waste stuff and there had to be some sort of plot, but I seem to remember that it was them just doing the whole thing, and I totally forgot that it quickly becomes not just about them, but it's about them dealing with this psychotic. And the funniest thing is, Keith David is the guy who's sent to
observe them
and take notes about whether or not they're fit to be garbage men.
They set it up that he's like, you know,
and he's nutty.
This is clearly like a no-count job that his brother-in-law is helping out with, probably, but it does seem odd, yeah.
Yeah, and when they think he's taking notes, turns out he's just drawing pictures.
Of like, yeah.
But he's still furious.
He's drawing pictures of like people at a boardwalk getting bombed by by Blue Thunder.
He's hilarious, he was really good in it.
He was good.
And then the pizza guy sees him pushing the corpse around.
Yeah, Dean Cameron shows up in between Ski School 1 and 2.
You keep calling him by name like anyone knows who Dean Cameron is.
Hey, man.
Just because people have seen the Ski School movies doesn't mean anything.
The Ski School movies are staples.
They're not staples of anything except for, like, late night, probably Showtime or HBO 3. One of those.
HBO
you know,
3.
Yeah, one of those HBO ones that has like a specific title.
Okay.
Like HBO Laughs with a couple of F's in it.
Okay, I can see that. Which is where you definitely should find Men at Work. Not on Netflix streaming. It's a rarity. The epic journey I had to go through to get this movie.
Gosh, yeah. You thought for sure it was on there. I think at one point it was, and I just let it sit there for too long.
It's your fault it's not on there. You know what, though? Guaranteed, now that we have seen it, I've gone through the epic journey, it'll pop up.
Yeah.
A pop up.
Men at Work. It really was. I remember it being...
I always remember it having more of a plot than it actually does have.
But it's actually way better than I remember. Because,
I'm glad you... Yeah,
kind of. It's just so ridiculous. And there's, like, very few intended laughs in it, I think, except for the Keith David stuff. But the unintended laughs are pretty good. There's this, like... And there's for it being a comedy, there's a bunch of threads that go nowhere.
Oh, yeah.
Tons of threads.
Well, I mean, like, for it being, like, something that's... It seems almost like Emilio started with the idea of doing, like, a real, like, story with structure and characters that grow and stuff, and then just abandoned that about 40 minutes in. And I think that's when it becomes a better movie, honestly, is once it becomes, like, the zany one night with, like, the pizza guy and Keith David, and it kind of spirals into, like, a, you know, sort of series of...
Right.
You know, bizarre action set pieces and stuff, it becomes a little better than if when it's like them talking about like him and Han about being hopeless and starting their surf shop or whatever that never amounts to anything.
Right.
What was the other thing that didn't? Oh yeah, the golf clap never came back either.
That's just something they did.
But they mentioned it. Twice. One mentions it to the other one like as if it's something they do.
So you think they should have done it again at the end?
I think they should have done it at least three times. Rule of threes for comedy.
Listen.
Rule of threes.
No.
I didn't write this. I didn't invent this. I was the first to come up with it.
Listen.
You do the golf clap three times.
If you're Emilio Estevez, you don't have to follow any rules at all, first of all.
Apparently that's
the truth.
It's
better that he didn't. They did do a callback to something, which was they walked by each other and high-fived with trash can lids.
Right.
And they did that later to John Getz.
When they put Getz through the ringer. Yeah.
You know, when he really gets his just desserts.
Yes, he does.
He gets a little soppy. He gets a little wet at the end.
Oh,
and they
sure.
stand there and they're like, oh, man, we showed him.
They did.
We got revenge on him for all that happened. I mean, he murdered a man.
A couple people.
He
Maybe a couple?
No, just one.
Really? Was the congressman?
It was a congressman.
It was slimy.
Who played Bernie in it.
Mm-hmm. They did Bernie it up a little.
And then there's the love interest. So,
but what's his name? I mean, Estevez's character
Estevez
doesn't get the
love interest.
Even though they set it up for him to change.
He was just the serious guy, and they end up having him because he's the more serious guy. You have to play him off with Keith David, so they kind of pair them together after Sheen goes to get his with the girl.
I feel like a shot for shot remake of this should be done by that should be the next season of Always Sunny. It should just be Men at Work.
Reffin will do a shot for shot remake of it.
Oh, for sure.
Because Drive felt like that to me also. Like there was a lot of threads that were cut out, but that was just because like he's allowed to do that. He's European.
Yeah.
So it'll make sense when people watch his remake of Men at Work. Everyone will be like, that's good. I like it.
Yeah.
I like what he did there.
I like how he bucked the system.
He bucked the system.
And he was able to make, you know, like to
but
work.
But it starts with them having a dream, right?
I guess. Sort of.
Well, it's Estevez's dream, but they're both very lazy about it.
Yeah, very lazy about
like,
it.
Like, we're going to have this surf shop. Look at how this place is booming around here.
It's kind of like American Buffalo kind of thing, where it's like they're going to talk about doing it, but they're not going to do it.
Right.
Just going to talk. Just Dennis Franz. Just chewing the fat.
So... and then that never comes up again. They go through the shenanigans.
No, the intrigue and the plot.
They put Getz through the ringer.
Yeah.
And then they just stand there and cackle a little bit. And then the little ending piece.
The coda.
Is just a couple of cops in a gay panic gag.
Yeah.
That's all it is. A couple of bike cops.
Well, they were real cops in the end, at night.
Yeah, at night they were real cops. In the day they're bike cops.
Right.
Yeah, are they hired by two different agencies for that?
I don't know. They probably just travel different
Pacific Blue during the day.
Yeah.
And at night, they're just regular old.
They're just TJ Hooker style.
TJ Hooker style. It's got a lot of everything in it. It's a comedy of manners.
Mm-hmm. You're forgetting, you completely
it's a comedy of the sexes.
About the rivalry of the other two.
There's a rivalry with
the
guys.
And the fecal bombs.
And they throw them into the mix later, too. Like, Yeah. They're all driving after each other.
They elevate the action when they cut the brakes with acid.
They cut the brakes. They should have shown them getting back at them one more time.
I feel like they did.
There's a lot of stuff they didn't do in the coda. Yeah. They should have shown them at the surf shop. The other guys pull up to pick up their trash while they're working.
Yeah.
And when they open the trash, there's actually like a letter bomb in there, and it kills the two guys. And they're like, yeah, and then they high-five one more time.
They'd be shrapnel and stuff. I'm like, yeah.
With their trash can lids, and then they golf clap the corpses.
I could do that. I could find that.
And then Keith David pulls the corpses away and has his own wacky shenanigans with those two corpses.
For sure.
So, and we never saw if they got a good review. Because at one point...
Right, he was going to put it on his report.
He does mention to Estevez, after he's just done a bunch of crazy stuff himself.
We're talking about Keith David.
Yeah,
now.
This is all going on the report that I'm going to give to my brother-in-law, who's your employer. And I pointed out, he was at fault for almost everything that they went through. They found the dead body, and that was a great shot, that him just kind of casually getting out of the truck and then coming over and looking at that, and he's like, hey, look at that.
Yep.
There's a dead guy crammed in there.
Uh-huh.
And
somebody threw away a perfectly good whiteboard.
Yeah,
that was a tagline. You know that was a tagline.
I'm pretty sure that was not a tagline.
I gotta be.
I'm almost certain that was not involved in the advertising for that film.
Oh, man. We did watch the trailer, and it didn't show.
And
the
it's one of those early '90s PG-13 movies where, like, I mean, they were still fleshing out what PG-13 was at that point, right?
It's possible, yeah.
So there's the N word once,
yeah,
and the F word once. And then the rest is just GDs and S's.
Yeah.
You know, that's the basic PG-13 platform. Except for the N-word. It's kind of strange to throw in there. A little weird. Estevez was like, let's go ahead and do it.
Yeah. Maybe because he thought it was like Keith David taking it on.
And it was said by an African-American.
And owning
character.
It or something. I don't know, though. I can't assess it. It's a different time, you know?
And Keith David breaks the fourth wall.
He breaks the fourth wall. Which is just as offensive, yeah. I think.
But it's this combination of things. It starts with Estevez on the beach, waking up with some girl. So you think it's about him and a girl, maybe?
Nope.
Not at all.
No, it starts with the guy with the bad guys. Actually,
it starts with the bad guys.
With the illicit dumping of yellow barrels.
Yeah, and toxic waste. And so you think maybe it's going to be an environmentalist movie about toxic waste, but it ends up being just that kind of thing gets said. So at one point, one of the characters shows kind of. Almost fake disgust over how could you do that, you monster, like Keanu Reeves style. Like, but they don't really care.
No, it doesn't.
The only
seem
time anyone
really
mentions
cheap.
It again is when they're kind of making a sarcastic joke before they smash someone in the face with the butt of a gun.
And you never get a sense of what, like, the real goal for the villain is, other than he's got.
He just wants to dump some toxic waste.
He's got,
like you said, it's like the bad guy
in Captain,
bad guys in Captain Planet,
Captain Planet
who somehow profit from the actual, like, literal destruction of the environment.
They could have made that an issue. It would have been hard to be like, these guys are waste disposal unit. They're mafia types.
Now Seth says he's about to get his payback. He's about to get his payback.
In full? Ask if it's in full. Seth's watching Payback virtually while we're doing this. Is another part of the show we're trying to add for year five is Seth cluing in virtual style. Ask Seth what he thinks about Men at Work.
It's
good radio right here.
It's really good radio. So you get with that, and then you go to a rear window situation where he looks.
This is Charles now.
Went to Sheen, and he's looking at a bunch of people's windows when he wakes up in the morning. He's already awake, and he's sitting there with his gun.
But it's early morning. It's still dark morning. You know, it's like people that are awake, and it's weird to see how many people actually
awake doing stuff at like
5:50 in the morning or something.
Probably earlier than 5:50.
It depends on the time of year, but yeah.
Oh, you think it was winter?
It was Southern California. You can't tell.
Can't tell. I mean, it was probably shot at like 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
Keep it pitch black. This is long. The introductory scene with Sheen is just him looking at people's windows for like 5 minutes.
Yeah. You get a little detective sense of him.
Because he
assesses like, oh, she's got the top shelf alcohol, so he knows what kind of gal she is.
Right. Once again, none of that ever comes up again. All it's just there for is so that he can.
He seems extra creepy later.
Put his foot in his mouth later when he mentions that she has Dom Perignon in her fridge.
Yeah.
At one point, I thought he was going to say something about, like, when she went to go make him a drink. Like, yeah, make it with that Stoli I saw on your top shelf over there. But no, he doesn't bring up the Stoli. He does mention the Dom Perignon.
Yeah.
And then he says something about, like, doesn't everybody have that in their fridge?
Yeah.
And no, they don't, because it's... it is prohibitively expensive.
Which makes her motivation to want to share it with this stranger that showed up at her apartment.
Yeah, so he shows up at her apartment later after some ridiculous shenanigans have gone down already where, like...
Well, the whole structure of the story is loses it when she's the campaign manager of the congressman that knew about this illegal dumping and had tape. And so then he gets assassinated by the bad guys. You do it all very sloppy. And then a day goes by. Estevez and Sheen find the body. Think, oh no, what's going on here? Because they saw... Basically, they didn't see the guy get killed, but they know who the guy is. Mm-hmm. And Sheen shot him with the rifle. Air rifle because he saw him being abusive to the... Or panic, whatever, to the campaign manager lady. And then after a day, she comes home and she just wants to have a drink. She isn't worried that her, you know, the guy she's running a campaign for wasn't around all day or anything like that. And she's just keen to get drunk with Sheen, which makes no sense. So that's where they're at, you know. Keith David's got the body with Emilio and then the pizza guy. And then Charles is over trying to sort of figure out what she does or doesn't know about this body.
But very quickly he loses interest in that and just kind of wants to get with her.
Well, right. Yeah, that was always the subtext, you know. That was his rationale.
And so then Emilio just has to put up... But it's like, it's all these different movies and it's just like all mixed up with each other. Like, I don't know. I thought it was brilliant. Brilliantly done. I love it. I think it's great. I think I highly recommend Men at Work, and I think everyone should watch it and would love it.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. You don't think that? You had problems.
I don't know if I had problems. I feel like it just could have been, for what it was trying to do, it could have been like more focused in that respect. Like it would have been better if it all took place in one 24-hour period as opposed to like what feels like 3 days. For some reason that throws me off.
No way. It was in one night.
No, it was in a morning, a night, and then another day, and then another night. At least.
There wasn't.
Because there was at least two nights. There was the night when he shot the guy with the air rifle, then there was the whole next night that most of the story took place. And I think it could have taken place
But from the time where they found the corpse, it was one 24-hour period.
Oh, yeah. From where they find the corpse. That's
the gist of it.
But really, they don't find the corpse.
The movie doesn't start until Keith David gets in there.
Oh, of course.
That's when they find the corpse.
And that's true, but if you think about it, that's like probably close to like 30 minutes into the movie or so. It's a good piece into the movie. That's what I'm saying, is that it could have been better structured in that first
movie. And then there's the hitmen. The killers who work for John Getz,
right?
And they're really good too. They're completely incompetent, first of all.
Well, one of them's cutting edge with his taser.
Yeah, but that doesn't come until later. And they trade roles off and on about which one of them is kind of more dominating. They both go at each other's throats. I feel like the creators of Pineapple Express stole that for their Craig T. Robinson and what's his butt, the indie actor.
It's a dream. It's possible. Yeah. They did, but I want to say...
And there was the great line in there where the one guy's...
What about the two guys from Diamonds Are Forever? They seem like they're just the two guys from Diamonds Are Forever.
No, because they're lovers.
That's true. They cut that part out. Or they transferred it to the cops in this.
The cops aren't lovers, though. They just get put
really?
In...
Really?
It's not what it looks like.
Really? Are you sure it's not what it looks like?
It's not what it looks like. They looked like...
They insist on it too much, I think. There's a little protesting.
They doth protest too loudly or whatever it is. Yeah. Whatever Shakespeare said about Men at Work. But there's a great line where... So they lost the body because they went over a speed bump too fast, right?
Yeah, and they lost the barrel.
They put the body in. And they didn't realize it till the next day.
And they didn't go looking for it for like a long time after.
Anyway, they're in the car and the guy picks up his 1980s cell phone. Mm-hmm. It was made in 90, but I'm sure they shot it in 89 or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's the boss, and he's like, you idiots, you didn't get the body, you didn't get the right tape, because there's a tape, and I guess this little switcheroo happens.
Yeah.
And,
The campaign manager ends up with the tape.
But he gets the call, and the other guy's busy making origami and messing with the driver of the car. Not a good idea, by the way.
Not when the cops are around.
Yeah. And he goes, and he's like, and he hangs up, and he's like, I think he wants us to kill some more people. And the other guy goes, in between bites of food, goes, all right.
Yep.
They're very casual about it.
As a director, has a keen sense of humor.
He doesn't have a keen sense of visual flair, because the movie was shot pretty poorly.
Yeah, it was definitely...
And it wasn't cinematography, it was the idea that, like...
I want to talk again. yard.
That's what we're talking
now, yeah.
Why'd you just kiss Ian?
He kissed my elbow.
No, he kissed your butt, your
my tricep.
Tricep, yeah. Your try. He'll try anything. What do you have to say about Men at Work?
So I wanted to call on that.
You want to make a call on that? Who you want to call?
Voices.
You want to call Voices?
Mm-hmm.
They keep calling me?
A lot of ponytails in this movie.
Yeah, there were. Yeah, Sheen pulls one off for a while because every once in a while his mullet becomes a little unmanageable, so he puts it back in like a 1-inch ponytail.
Right. Yeah, samurai style.
Yeah, just to keep the last few split ends out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And Estevez has a little longish thing going too, but he doesn't ponytail it.
No, doesn't need to.
He did it in another movie.
I want to say that
he might have done it in Loaded Weapon 1 once.
I don't know. There could have been more for those two characters. They could have been more. Don't they set it up for you to think that Estevez is going to have to learn to be more responsible with women, but he doesn't?
All the stuff they set up. None of the stuff came to fruition at all.
Except for the relationship that Charles had.
They responsibly shut down a toxic waste dumping.
Yes, they did.
They saved the girl.
Remember how the captain of the police was in on it with Getz? That never came back.
No, that never came back. So he probably just killed them later.
Oh my gosh. This is rife for a sequel.
Well, Getz was still alive, so he probably ratted him out. He probably sold him out down the river to commute a few years off his sentence, right?
So that's the cop, you
mean? The cop, yeah.
So you think the next one would be like them with Getz, like, and the
there
whole
is no next
force.
One. And you kept talking about spin-off TV shows. There's no
right. The Pacific Blue one and Dear John.
Yeah, Dear John
was a spin-off.
Even though Judd Hirsch was not in it,
not even a little.
And they also play at the idea that Estevez just goes from woman to woman, so he doesn't need a woman like Sheen. But and also they never show this. Sheen's just kind of there peeping on people in the morning, this rear window thing. And then later he's like, oh, my girl left me last night. They never they have to have him telling that.
Yeah,
that's another reason why it's a great film.
Because a lot of telling, not showing.
Because it does a lot of telling and not showing, which just flies in the face of how you're supposed to do it. So I think Sheen and Estevez knew how to make a movie.
Oh, of course.
And they're like, you know what? We're just not going to do it that way. We're going to do it the Estevez way.
Yeah.
The Martin, Joe, Charlie, and Emilio Estevez way.
That sounds right. Sounds good. I wonder if you showed it to Coppola or anyone before for notes.
You think they went to a Coppola? You think they went to Sophia?
It's possible.
Who at the time was, what, 8?
Maybe.
When was Godfather 3 shot?
Like 92 or
and
something.
She was how old then?
I don't know. She was probably like
15?
Was she 15? She was older than 13. She was supposed to be banging Andy Garcia in that movie, right?
I don't know. I've never seen it.
You've never seen Godfather 3?
No, I heard
3.
It was terrible. I'm not going to watch it.
It's not great, but it's like you should still see it.
How long is it? Remember, I'm at the age where...
Right, you're at that age. I forgot. Yeah, don't worry about it then.
I'm not going to get home from work one night and be like, oh, I have exactly 2.5 hours for when I go sleep.
I know.
What should I do? Oh, I'll watch Godfather 3.
Okay. So, yeah, I think Men at Work gets a... It gets a 2.5 out of 5 for me. It gets a pass. It gets a you should see it.
I think it's a 3.5 out of 5 at least.
Wow.
It's pretty funny.
Okay.
I enjoyed it.
You did enjoy it. And I enjoyed that you enjoyed it. I don't know why. I just didn't. I think I thought that it was more
it didn't speak to you?
Plot driven maybe or something.
And that would have made it better for you?
I don't know. With movies like that, sometimes it does.
It ended up being wacky, man.
It was wacky, but it just didn't, I don't know. Something didn't connect as strong as I would have hoped. I think in the end I would have preferred more with the trio just driving the truck around, having misadventures, you know?
Like they have misadventures constantly.
That's true. They do have a lot of those.
And shenanigans.
There's a lot of shenanigans. I don't know. I mean, if Dean Cameron could have maybe brought more of what he brought in Ski School to this.
He did exactly what he did in Ski School in this, which was he just looked dumbfounded and showed no emotion.
That's a good point.
He did roll his eyes back a couple times.
Well, he opened the door for Getz to his car when they were putting him through the ringer.
Sure, he did that. He was very polite about it, too.
He was. And then they had the body set up for the other guy with the martini because they had reverence for the dead.
In reference for the dead. And they had a lot of time to set up this whole scheme.
And they did.
To have him trip around Rube Goldberg style. Right before falling down.
Yep.
I mean, what they should have done was put them in there with the body and then drive the car off a cliff.
That would have been good.
What if it showed them brutally murdering this guy at the end of it? That would have been...
Like revenge style.
Yeah.
Maybe if Tarantino remakes this.
Remakes Men at Work?
Yeah.
Think that'll be the last film he makes before he calls it quits?
Is he supposed to call it quits, right?
He said something about how he wanted to make 10 films or something like that.
Or he said something about how directors should retire in their 60s or something like that. Like they should just kind of all stop at some age, maybe. I don't know what he said, actually.
He doesn't want to go out the Sidney Pollack way or whatever. Who is it? Who did it until he was dead?
A lot of them.
Sidney somebody. He did.
Sidney Lumet?
Lumet, yeah.
Sidney Pollack? Sidney.
It was Lumet.
They both like were still directors before they died.
Which one did Before the Devil Knows You're
That's
Dead?
That's Lumet.
Yeah.
Altman?
Yeah, Altman did it.
You know, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, if you have a good, if you can make
Tony
good
Scott.
Movies, Tony Scott. Yeah, a lot of those guys. Kubrick.
Yeah, Kubrick was still going hard.
You make movies and then you die.
He was going rock.
I wonder if that's what Malick's thing's all about with like having six movies in the lineup now. When
he's
he usually makes
dying.
Maybe he is dying and that's why he's like he's got to fast track it.
Seth says, "Tell Ian to bring me some beer."
Like from the house or what?
Like from the house.
Tell him I won't be coming back for at least, I think, I don't know, a while. We have a chicken to eat here.
Coming back for at least, I don't know.
Like a while.
Like a while.
We have a chicken to eat here.
He made a sad face.
I know. I told him no dice. So yeah, so you liked it more than I did.
It was great.
But you know, there's really no problem with it, I think. I didn't expect it to be that good anyway.
It's ridiculous, man. I can't believe you would do this.
What? I'm just kind of lukewarm on it. I don't know. I wish I liked it more. I liked it more when I was a kid. I don't remember what it was that really turned me around about it when I was younger. I do remember liking it a lot more once the pizza guy shows up, once it really gets rolling, you know? I think the big problem is the separation of Charles and Emilio. Like, because the first half, it's all about them being buddy-buddy, but then you break from them for, like, the second half of the movie, and you lose that buddy-buddy. And then you're right, you end up... fortunately, you've got Keith David and Estevez, and that's good. I wonder why they didn't go on to do more movies together. That should have been happening.
Keith David, Estevez, and Charlie Sheen?
Or just Keith David and Estevez.
I don't think the public was clamoring for more.
We also watched sci-fi movie Dragon Wasps here recently with Corin Nemec.
Corin Nemec.
Really turning in a I would say, a mold-breaking performance as a hard-ass military type.
Right.
Were they mercenaries or actually proper, like,
they were
soldiers?
Proper soldiers. Remember, because he was getting his release papers?
Yeah,
transfer papers.
And there was some logic for why they were there,
in a foreign country.
They were
there fighting the working. He died, right?
Everyone died pretty much.
Yeah,
and then they got high on coke, and
except for
the scientist ladies,
the kind of busted face lady and her dad.
Yeah,
who's like, she's actually in a bunch of stuff. You were obsessed with finding out what she was in.
I felt like I recognized her from something, but then I didn't.
Probably so you could go home that night and watch some more of her privately. Was that right?
No.
No, see if her busted face was any better
manage to have that happen.
Her face wasn't really that bad. It's just a very odd looking for. I mean, not odd looking for a sci-fi film.
No,
not at all.
No.
In fact, probably better. But she was a very like marble mouthed actor.
Well, it's because she's Polish. She's Polish. I looked that up. English is not her first language.
Well, she sounded like an English.
She
first
sounded
language.
Canadian. Is what she sounded like.
Yeah, she did kind of sound Poland by the way of Canada.
Yeah, that could be it. Anyway, we sort of enjoyed the latter half of that, I would say, right?
Oh yeah, the latter half, absolutely. When they started doing cocaine.
Yeah.
It really became a pretty decent movie.
I would say so, yeah.
And the idea behind that was these wasps didn't like the scent of the coca leaf.
Right.
And so they found coca leaves. And just
at first it was mild,
crushed them and rubbed them all over them, and then they would just act super wacky, and they did a really good job of making them. I mean, it was over the top. I've seen people on coke and they don't actually act like that, but they were like, you have to be over the top in a movie for people to get it, because if people just acted like they did in real life when they're on coke, they would just sit there and grind their jaws back and forth.
Over right, it. Yeah.
That's all they would do, was just grind their jaws.
Is that the people you saw on Coke?
Everyone I know who's ever done
their
Coke.
Their jaw just, grinders?
Just, yeah, just grinds their jaw a lot.
That's weird. It seems pointless. Maybe they do too much.
Well, they feel good.
Mixing it with other stuff. But
you'll notice when they're talking, they do this a lot. Like their jaws move back and forth, because they just, I guess things just feel good, so you just do them a lot.
Oh, weird.
Like move your jaw sideways.
Huh.
But yeah, that got pretty great. And then like,
remember her friend? She had to murk her friend.
Yeah, she had to murk her friend. And Nemec was like, "Hey, like, don't stress, man. It's all good.
These
like,
things have to happen.
Like, hey, I would have done that to you."
They laid an egg inside of her, and she
would have done it to
she
you.
She was turned into a.
I would do it for anyone.
She was turning into a dragon wasp.
And then they did a thing where. Korn Namek was like, "I don't want to leave this jungle, man. Like, I like doing this job."
It wasn't that. It was like he didn't know if there was anything for him anymore. It was one of those weird things where, like, you get sucked into something you don't like, but you do it so much and that's your life, and then you kind of are nervous about
I understand that.
You know?
But he used that and made this decision like, while very high
on
coke.
I think I can just cut to the chase on this. It was a Brooks was here kind of moment, kind of situation.
Yeah,
you know?
How can you... Are you seriously... Comparing what Korn Namek does in a coke-fueled haze at the end of a sci-fi movie is similar to a Brooks was here moment from Shawshank Redemption. Isaiah, you're too close to the TV.
I'm saying that it's like, I mean, that's the psychology of the character, basically.
Because now he's about to be on the outside, and if he got back to the outside, he would just hang himself at the.
He doesn't know. Yeah, it's like you know. Yeah.
What if he got to the apartment and saw that Brooks was here and was like, ah.
And he knew?
And he's like, I gotta go find
go find Andy.
Andy building the boat in Mexico.
Yeah. It's all good, man.
Andy Dufresne. Going back to Shawshank really quick.
Right.
One of the better gags.
A lot of people like that movie. A lot of people really like
yeah,
that movie.
People
like
have,
a lot. I think it's a good movie, but a lot of people really like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, people, it's beloved by fans. It is a very good like drama movie.
Oh, sure.
It really is. And it's got, you know, it's got some, it's more than just a drama film. Like, if Stephen King just stuck to stuff where it was like a real life story that just had some kind of fantastic stuff in it instead of the horror, because he's really, I mean, I know people love him. And this may sound like, you know, heretical or whatever, but he's a joke as a horror writer, because it's just like
Land Monster.
No, it's I don't know. I've never read anything that he wrote that I actually found scary. But the stuff that he's done that they were able to make dramatic films out of,
like The Body,
like The Body and The Green Mile and all that stuff. Though that does have a fantastical element
sure.
to it also. Those end up being pretty good, and they end up being pretty good movies. And then I never read Shawshank, but the movie is a very good populist movie. It's a very good populist movie.
Right.
The populace likes it
mm-hmm.
a lot. And I think critics liked it. You're not going to find it on any best of list, I don't think.
But not in the top 25.
Right. But it was very well received, and it's one of those things that's like a movie where a guy gets crapped on so hard and then gets out of it at the end. And he does it without any real malice. He does it without malice. He just escapes. Like,
yeah.
Tim Robbins was very good in it. Morgan Freeman. It was like career defining for a lot of those guys. It really was. And for Darabont especially, it was great for him. He's had a long and storied career, but I think that was probably his peak as a...
He was a writer for Lucas.
Yeah. I know, yeah. He did a draft of...
Of
Indiana Jones 4 that wasn't liked by Lucas. I guess it didn't have enough, or it had too many aliens in it. So Lucas toned down the aliens to a level people would love.
The interdimensional beings?
Whatever.
Right.
Korn
Namek.
Well, wait, I'm going to get back to the...
Parker Lewis can't lose.
My Family Guy gag.
Oh, okay.
So, at the point where Family Guy was back for me...
Mm-hmm.
And it no longer is anymore, so it has peaks and valleys. But I liked those first three seasons. Then
right.
I watched them on DVD, and in many drunken nights with a couple of my buddies, they were utterly hilarious. There was some really good writing in those first three seasons. And then it was gone, and then it came back, and it was trying too hard. It was
okay.
just like the Futurama, the way the Futuramas
sure,
came back.
Yeah.
And then they found their groove again.
Okay.
And it's somewhere in that second groove for Family Guy. There was the one where they he was telling the story of Shawshank Redemption with him as Dufresne, and he's climbing through the sewer. Right. Or he's about to get into the sewer, but he has to break into it when there's noise.
Uh-huh.
And the warden, who's being played by Lois's father, is watching
by Carter Petersman.
Yeah, is watching Friends really loudly. And so he sits there with the rock, waiting to bang it on the sewer. And it's the theme song to Friends. So no one told you that it was gonna be this way. And right then he goes, dang, 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 like, like that fast and hard. And it breaks the sewer and he goes inside. I was just like, he just does it so lightning fast and does it hard enough that it smashes the sewer to pieces. And of course he doesn't notice it because of the stupid little drum roll in that part.
Friends, yeah.
I don't know. I thought that was pretty funny.
No,
every once in a while they do something like that that still makes me laugh.
Yeah, no, that's sort of how comedy works. People want to say, they want to be like, oh my gosh, I like this, and this is Kip, and this is cool, and underground, or this is actually, and it's good. I think a lot of people, it's hard to like something when it's actually out, and it's easy to praise something that's past. You know, like seasons of The Simpsons or old SNL.
Right.
People talk about like that original Saturday Night Live and stuff. Some people, it's like, I don't know, what is the term?
Nostalgic.
No, but it's like when it's put on a bigger pedestal than it deserves, you know? It's
put on a pedestal.
Yeah.
It's like what you do with something.
Sure.
No, I know what you mean. In fact, but I try to get away from that. By watching stuff that I actually like, I think I've become a pretty good judge for myself of It's Always Sunny. And
sure.
I can be very honest with myself that one just didn't do it for me. There was one a few weeks ago. I'll be very vague because you haven't watched the last couple.
I haven't watched the last two.
So maybe one of those two I really didn't like.
Okay.
And by the end of it, I was like, that just tried too hard. It wasn't well written. But other times, like I will feel it. And I'll notice that, like, you know, like AV Club does their review of it. And I'll read some other stuff. Like there's a couple other TV sites that do reviews of things that just happened, the shows that just happened. And I generally really love the ones that the TV critics tend to be like, oh, this one was okay. But some of those, like, I felt like that Wall Street one was pretty fantastic. And
oh, yeah, that was good.
A lot of the jokes in that just made me just lose it. And I don't think other people like that one that as much.
I mean, now I could see how that one would work.
But, like, you know, I'm judging that for me, so...
Which is what you're always going to do. I think even most for comedy, I think. Because
absolutely.
You can't convince someone that something that they don't think is funny,
right.
And the other way around. If somebody laughs at it, they do.
If you try to explain comedy, it makes it even less
right.
funny.
That's
you can't explain
it's
why
it's really
you
the
something
one
funny.
Place where it's just like, okay, that's just how it has to be, you know? It's like, you don't think it's funny? Fine. But other stuff, I feel like you can give somebody a...
And that's what I feel about Men at Work. Here's the thing about Men at Work. So, it's a comedy.
Right. It is a comedy. It's kind of an action comedy, but I'll give you that.
Maybe a little bit. At one point,
it was the end of the action comedy
ducks
era.
Under a forklift.
Yes,
that's the extent of the action, pretty much.
Right. Yeah.
So it's one of those movies that's a comedy.
Right.
It's not really funny, but there is some funny stuff in it intentionally, and then the stuff that's not intentionally funny is actually pretty funny. So it ends up being very funny for me.
I think that's
a very successful 80s 90s comedy for me.
I think in a lot of respects it's. They'll call it a comedy to give them kind of a carte blanche, to sort of not have to adhere to certain dramatic elements.
Because you know what stuff is really funny from that era? Are the movies that aren't actually supposed to be comedies.
Well, I don't know if it's all ironic comedy.
No, not ironic. Goonies, Back to the Future, the stuff that has comedy in it, but it's like an adventure film.
Yeah.
Those are action comedies.
That's what I was going to say.
Those aren't action comedies. Those are adventure films.
Okay, if you want to split hairs, fine. I will give you that.
Action comedy is like Bulletproof with Adam Sandler and Damon Wayans.
Oh, okay, fine.
That's an action comedy. Money Train is an action comedy.
Lethal Weapon is an action comedy.
Okay, yeah, fair.
Die Hard is an action comedy.
After Lethal Weapon 1, maybe, and maybe even 2.
Yeah.
Die Hard is not an action comedy.
Die Hard is straight action because it's the actual...
It's the defining action film.
Right, but it's got a lot of comedy in it.
Action should. But an action comedy is different.
Okay, I'll give you that. I will give you that.
If you want to split
and
hairs,
then
No.
And then adventure is... There's more...
Adventure is more plot.
Then that's probably why
it's usually a journey of some sort.
Right, and that's probably what I would have wanted a little... because they almost hinted.
That's what you wanted more out of Men at Work?
Maybe. They hinted at it a little. A little bit. I'm sorry. I think, and yes.
You wanted them to find one-eyed Willy's bag full of gems.
And then be like, no, those are Willy's. Those are Willy's.
No, they just didn't take the gold. They took the gems.
No, there was this, like, plate that was gold and gems, and those were Willy's.
Whatever. They took a bag full of glass baubles.
Yes, they did.
And they gave them to Sean Astin's dad, who then told the developers to shove it up their butt.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, we got this bag full of gems.
And
he
ripped up the contracts.
Yeah.
Which would never... If they remade that movie, it wouldn't work because they would have, like, faxed the contracts and everything would have happened already.
Yeah. They probably should have been like, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That was just your copy of the contract. It's already done.
Yeah, this is going through. We bulldozers are happening right now.
They're literally raising your house.
Richard Donner,
yeah,
who did Superman, which I watched recently.
He does all your action comedies.
Yeah, he does. Okay, so that is good. That is a good point, though. The adventure comedy, or just the adventure movie, is...
But there are things that are pseudo-adventures that are probably just comedies. Like, I don't know if you could actually call... Romancing the Stone or Jewel of the Nile an adventure film. I think
I would call comedies. I would call the second one an adventure film. Jewel of the Nile for sure, because there's like definitely like a sense of like they go to a different locale.
But A, it's parody.
It's loose parody.
And B, it's about the relationship, and the rest is the trappings of it.
I don't know. I feel like there's enough.
The goal is the relationship. Are you going to deny that?
In the first one or the second one? The second one, they're already together. In the second one, they're already together. I'm saying you're right. I think yes. That the second one is more of an adventure movie than the first. I like the second one better. I saw the second one first.
Indiana Jones films are adventure films.
Yes. They're just like Die Hard is your action movie, and yes. Indiana Jones is your adventure movie. Right. But there's a lot less comedy in an Indiana Jones movie
there's
than in something like
comedy,
Goonies.
But absolutely, because it's a kids' adventure movie. And Back mm-hmm. to the Future essentially are kids' adventure movies also.
Yeah.
They were mostly aimed at kids, despite sure. the high swear rate and things like that.
It was a different time. Kids, they yeah. kind of understood that balancing act.
Gosh, you know what? Those
you hadn't had all these special interests.
Those Back to the Future films, those are great.
They're good. I haven't seen them.
And
they're Josh's favorite movies.
They're great.
He loves them.
They really are. They're fantastic. And it's weird. Like, that was a time... And it's hard to tell if I'm being nostalgic or not, but that was the time. In the 80s, especially, man. The 80s were just...
Yeah.
Boomtown.
They were.
For just great films.
You're probably being nostalgic to a degree, but like I said, we just watched Men at Work and we had different reactions to it, and like... There's 90. A balancing act. Right, that's 92. It's just like Total Recall.
Total Recall. It
really I mean, really, if you want to talk about the 80s movies probably start... In a weird way, you could cheat it and
you
say...
You start with Jaws.
You start with Jaws in 75.
Yeah.
And you
end with Terminator 2, because Terminator 2
in 92,
is obviously no longer an 80s film.
I don't know, man.
Because it's a step up.
I feel like you could... I feel like True Lies is a very much so an 80s type movie. And that was after Terminator 2, right?
True Lies has a technical... It was made by technical virtuosos, and no action films even in the 80s were made by technical
virtuosos. What do you mean, Cameron?
Cameron became better.
Yeah?
He became technically better, and that was the end of the 80s action film.
Really? So
yes.
Aliens
is dirty and raw.
Really?
Yes. Die Hard is dirty and raw. And when people get shot, it's messy looking.
Okay, right, yeah.
The set pieces were not as expensive yet.
Mm-hmm.
Aliens, for as much as it might have cost to make, probably cost maybe half of what True Lies cost. Terminator mm-hmm. 2 was very expensive also to shoot.
Those
were extremely expensive movies. Waterworld is not an 80s film. That's a 90s
right,
film.
Yeah. So the blockbuster got overblown at that point.
But because the blockbuster action film happened by accident.
Yeah.
Lethal Weapon... was just it created a genre basically of the action cop thing that was like action buddy cop comedy action
right, yeah.
shooting, you know, and with bigger and bigger things. And the first one, they did go out to the desert at one point, but that hasn't really cost any money.
Not really.
And they have a dummy fall off a skyscraper, and they got some stuff in the streets. But the second one, you got boats and you got cars smashing through things and houses blowing up. It's like, true. The second one turns into a big thing because the first one accidentally made a ton of money. That's why.
You got cougarans, too, in the second one.
You had a lot of cougarans, and who knows how many cougarans were poured into the making of the film also.
Probably many. Because clearly, the government of South Africa co-supported that.
You're gonna say, what about our people, our Afrikaners? Let's do it. Let's go. That's we feel okay about that. That's Lethal Weapon 2 is a great film.
It's the only one I own.
That's a great film.
That and Star Trek 2 are the only two of those series that I own.
2 is really... Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. I keep trying to watch 3. And
3, I watched once and have no interest
in it. I like 3, and I want to watch it again. But every time I find a decent streaming quality one to watch, I don't know what's wrong. But every single one I find seems slightly sped up. And when they talk, their voices seem a little high. It bothers me, and I can't make it through 10 minutes. That's happened the last few times.
Rough, man.
So I need to find like my VHS copy, and then go find a VCR. Apparently,
I've got a couple of them. Do you want to borrow one?
I think Austin gave me one. A VHS copy.
Oh my gosh! Lethal Weapon 3. Yeah. So,
Jurassic Park is a '90s film.
Yes.
It was made in 93, so it could still fit into that area where if it still looked like an 80s film, it could be considered that 80s style. But it's a 90s film. 90s was the era of the intentional blockbuster, Speed.
Yeah, you know, and there were a few good ones in there, but they were mostly misses to a degree. There was something.
I wouldn't say they're mostly misses. I think there's some pretty.
I feel very middling about most of those movies, to be honest. And I know you love Jurassic Park. And Jurassic Park has a lot of good stuff. It's very ambitious. It's very cool. But I don't know.
Movies we just said.
Speed.
Total Recall.
Well, okay, Total Recall. I still consider. True Lies. Total Recall is an '80s movie.
Terminator
man.
2. There's some phenomenal films.
Even Terminator 2, I just don't like that much. I mean, I like
you
it. Okay.
Terminator 2. That much?
I'm talking like these are like 3.5 type movies.
Terminator 2 is great. That's a great movie.
I get all of the why, but it just for me personally, you know what I mean? Like that, there's just a point at which I'm just like. I rewatched it on Blu-ray a few years ago, and I enjoyed it, but I haven't seen it in, like, 10 years. And so it's one of those movies I can watch, like, every 10, 15 years, as opposed to, like, every 2 or 3 years. Something like Blade Runner I'll watch every 2 or 3 years.
And if we're going to talk about just which decade had like, better movies in it, I don't think you can deny that the 90s beats the 80s.
We're going to have to laundry list this, I think, because I feel like you were just talking about a thing about how great the 80s were.
The 80s was great for the accidental blockbuster that made all the movies that I will forever love from my childhood, but I'm not saying that The Goonies is a better film than, like, Goodfellas, are you?
No, but then if you're going to talk about that, then I'd almost say the 2000s for better quality movies. Remember we had those bumper years where we had There Will Be Blood competing against...
There are a couple against, years like that in the thousands, against, for sure.
Against, but, you know...
But like, the 90s, there are some seminal films. Absolutely seminal.
You got Fargo.
Despite what Saving Private Ryan... How Saving Private Ryan was completely pushed to the side by the AV Club's little group of people, I feel like that's a seminal film.
Okay.
Unforgiven. Seminal film.
Yeah.
I mean, there's tons. I mean, you could go through and just do this for every decade, of course.
Right, because you're reading like the Oscar ones.
But I feel like the 90s is
the 90s did have have the Miramax indie push thing that did incorporate a lot of very interesting stuff.
Yes.
You know,
and then changed the face of how movies could be made and stuff. I mean,
to a degree,
Tarantino changed the landscape of film.
Right, yeah. You know, you had Tarantino, you had Smith, everyone's written books and talked endlessly about all this stuff. And then all of their Pretenders and co-whatnots. I mean, you know, every other movie Harvey Keitel was in, you know, from 91 to 97 or something was probably something like this, you know. There's, like, City of Industry, you know, movies like that that exist that you see that are actually, like, these kind of, like, neo-noir... You know, informed by things like Pulp Fiction and, you know, Miramax jumped all over them and everything, probably. So I would agree with you there that there's definitely a place for that. But I don't know, like, nostalgia, maybe it's an inability to divorce from nostalgia, but the movies I saw when I was a kid in the 80s that I loved, a lot more of those I still love than maybe movies I saw in the 90s.
Well, but it's different because, again, the stuff in the 80s when you were, let's say, 5 or 7 or whatever, right, you will have received differently, mm-hmm, and they were aimed toward your age group. So,
but then I see them now.
Okay, but in the 90s, and some, if say some great kids movie came out in 97, I'm not saying one did, let's say there was something aimed at the 10 to 15 year olds in 97, mm-hmm, you were no longer, you weren't, you know, 5 years old.
I was kind of out of that wheelhouse, yeah.
So,
I don't know. You're judging a different age group of films.
Fifth
Element came out in 97, I think.
Okay.
And that was a great movie.
But that was kind of not really kids.
Yeah, it's a weird. You know what?
That's a weird one. It's a weird.
That's true though, because movies like that could probably not get made now, because now it's very much so geared towards either hitting like a huge blanket, it's the big tent,
or a tiny niche,
or it's a tiny niche, but it's never a big movie that's a tiny niche.
Yeah, never.
Like something like The Fifth Element has so many weird idiosyncrasies to it that for the cost of it and the size of it.
Well, and that's what's funny is like
what age group is that aimed for? Because that could be aimed from like I could see that going 12 to 40, and I don't know if that age group
Luc
exists.
Besson went from he made a couple things that were, I mean, they were definitely genre films.
He did La Femme Nikita, and then The Professional.
And then that turned into something where he probably got a budget to make something and made that. And then now is extremely successful doing this thing where he's gone back to making, I mean, they're action films, but they're really micro-budget action films.
Like Lockout, which I just watched on Netflix.
Yeah, and that one can't have cost that much. I mean, and you can tell that they kind of fast-tracked a lot of stuff in the CGI. And,
yeah.
But there's sets and stuff involved. He's still making the old-school type of film. The issue now is like, Even the ones he made that are rated R don't even really seem like that. Like that from Paris with Love.
Yeah,
it's rated R, but it's a goofy, weird movie.
Yeah, it's got.
I like that movie.
It
was really strange.
Yeah,
it was an odd film. I enjoyed that. But I mean, the Transporter movies and the Taken movies, like this guy is like, you know what we can do? He's like, let's write these little hooky action films and make them on the cheap compared to other movies.
And well, they probably get all kinds of deals with car dealerships and shit too.
They've got to,
because there's always a car chase. There's always something regal and cool about that. I mean, it really is like, let's get a whole stash of guys that make car commercials in Europe, and then give them
well. And that's another thing is that
half
those,
the money for one of those commercials,
of those European,
and they make a movie.
I mean,
you know?
The one thing also is that he's making Euro trash films, and they're I'm sure they're getting tax breaks and stuff in whatever countries they're shooting in, for the most part.
Yeah. And then you just have your one person. You have your Statham or your Neeson, who's a new action star in his, 50s or whatever at this point, which is interesting.
What a weird arc for him, man.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when you think... Did he win an Oscar for Schindler's List? I would imagine so.
Did him or Fiennes win? Did both of them win?
Did they compete against each other in that case? Because they were both pretty major characters.
No, Fiennes was
supporting. Well, then he probably won for that.
But so was
Kingsley.
I don't think Kingsley won.
No, Kingsley didn't have a lot to do in that movie. I mean, compared to what Fiennes did.
Kingsley was really good in it.
They were all good.
He had a couple of the major lines, too.
Well, sure he did, but I mean, in terms of a performance, what Fiennes did in that movie was like...
Neeson didn't win.
Okay.
And Fiennes wasn't nominated either. He must have...
Well, I don't even know then. Whatever.
Neeson has...
We started in Krull. We got Krull for Neeson. That's a proper adventure movie.
Who was in... that was Sam Neill. I was thinking, who was in The Piano? That wasn't Neeson.
No, that was Sam Neill.
Sam Neill didn't win anything. I love Sam Neill.
He's good. He's a lot of fun.
I
wanted him to be in the second Jurassic Park movie over the other guy, and then they brought him back for the third.
I mean, you don't like Goldblum?
Goldblum was okay, but like Goldblum with Sam Neill would have been better than just Goldblum with nothing and then just kind of yammering to himself half the time, and then Vince Vaughn's in the corner, you know? This daughter that he had, you know, that does her gymnastics. I don't really like The Lost World that much. Even though they shot part of it in my backyard.
I like Lost World. That's
I own awesome. It. That's the one I own. Yeah. Like my mom bought it for me or something.
Don't. I love my hook.
You have a hook?
Yeah, you got a hook.
I just want the hook.
Where's your hook?
accidentally. Yeah. And so when they go to kill the...
A drink. You can get your own drink. You know where the cups are? You know where the liquor is? You know where the liquor cabinet is? You know, you have the key?